A few years ago, all of the restrooms here at Blythewood had signs added to them. Toronto Public Health wanted to make sure that all of us knew how to wash our hands. At that point, as I said, it was a few years ago, it was somewhere around the time I turned 60, and I thought after 60 years of life that that was one of the few things that I had mastered. But evidently not. The city was not so sure. They wanted the signs posted. If you're going to wash your hands, you better do it the right way. Now, when the grandchildren are at our house for dinner, we announce the need for hands to be washed as a subtle way of saying that it's almost time for dinner. Time to put away that book, time to put away the puzzle or the toy that has your attention. Beyond that, Nanny and I do not supervise the hand washing to ensure that a proper amount of soap and water has been used. And so in this one aspect alone, I would not make for a good Pharisee. For one of the many things that the Pharisees regulated was the ceremonial hand washing that took place before a meal. Jesus is invited by a Pharisee to have dinner. The failure of Jesus to wash his hands becomes the prelude to a conversation about actions that matter. Now that's the important thing to notice, friends. The conversation here is not contrasting belief and action. The conversation here is about which actions matter. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Which actions matter? Much of the time, it seems to me, when we talk about the Pharisees, we speak as if they were men who were people of words and not actions. But nothing could be further from the truth. They were all about the meticulous regulating of various actions that they said were needed to fulfill the law of God. In his commentary on this text, William Barclay gives us the details of these regulations. First of all, the water for this ceremonial washing was kept in large stone jars. And some of you will remember that such jars are mentioned in the Gospel of John, chapter 2. The story about the wedding in Cana of Galilee. And it says, now there, standing there were six stone jars for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. So this is not multi-purpose water. This is water kept for ceremonial washing. An amount of the water to be used was specified. Even the process was specified. Water was poured from the tips of the fingers to the wrist, then in the palms, then water was poured, this time beginning from the wrist down to the fingertips. And as far as the Pharisees were concerned, to omit the slightest detail of this ritual was to commit a sin. Their concern is what a person is doing. And I wonder if Jesus had a particular burden of concern for Pharisees. I think he must have had some sympathy for what the Pharisees were trying to do. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, about the need for people to know what the law meant in this situation or that. For those of you who weren't here, I mentioned the fact that it's not the only thing that David and I do, but one of the things, we are your paid Pharisees, in the sense that we're asked about laws. I mean, the one, interestingly enough, the one that I've been asked about most in my time as a pastor is the forgiveness one. Most people know that Jesus asked us to forgive. Some people even know, some people who haven't heard a sermon in years, know that Jesus asked people to forgive more than once. And I've often been asked, what does that mean, Pastor? Perhaps the question that I'm asked most often is, do I have to forgive somebody who doesn't want to be forgiven? So Pharisees helped people understand what the law meant in this situation or that. You see, the Pharisees, they were not part-time religious people. They believed that the law of God applied to one's life 24/7. And Jesus believed that too. Jesus said, do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I've not come to abolish, but to fulfill. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Jesus also wanted all of God's people to correctly apply God's law to their lives all of the time. Jesus also was concerned about faithful actions being done by faithful people. But Jesus believed that somewhere, somehow, the Pharisees had lost their way. And he said to them, now you Pharisees clean the outside of the cup and of the dish, but inside you are full of greed and wickedness. It's not a matter of belief as opposed to action. It's about which actions matter. And so let's take a look at the actions that Jesus views with a critical gaze. First, there is the matter of tithing from the harvest of the garden. And whenever I read this verse, I think about one of my favorite recipes, Caesar salad with a homemade dressing. It's a recipe that we've used for more than 20 years. And this particular recipe, it calls for a quarter cup of chopped parsley. Now, when I cook, I'm pretty much a person who sticks. I don't eyeball very much. I stick with the measurements that are given in the recipe, but not in this recipe. The first time I made this salad, I tried to, you know, figure out what's a quarter cup of parsley. You know, obviously you've got to chop it first. I figured that out. You've got to chop the parsley first. But is that with the chopped parsley pushed down so all the air is out of it, or is that with the parsley allowed to expand? And so the second time I said, this is ridiculous. Why am I measuring? Why am I trying to measure a quarter cup of parsley? And so I did from the second time on that I made that. I just eyeballed that. Looks like a decent amount of parsley, and I just chopped it up and throw it in with the romaine. And so it's hard for me to imagine all the fuss and bother that would be associated with measuring out a tithe of one's parsley crop. Oh, there's plenty of activity here. But when all is said and done, it's not really any action that matters all that much. Next, Jesus talks about seeking the place of honor in the synagogue. Now, here's one of those situations that sounds wrong upon first hearing, but I think deserves further thought. You see, I don't think most of us would go through more than a day, if even a day, without encountering someone who occupies a place of honor. Chris and I have two daughters and a daughter-in-law who are teachers. They occupy a place of honor in our world in order to help children learn what is needed for a full and meaningful life. One of our neighbors is a Toronto police constable. I believe that Vince seeks to serve well, both to honor his profession and to be honored, because what he does is important in this city. I seek a place of honor with my grandchildren. One of the kids was working on a school project in which the teacher said, I want you to identify a family celebration and write a paragraph about it. Carter chose Easter, and he decided that his father couldn't be counted on to know enough about Easter as much as his grandfather would know about Easter, because his grandfather's a pastor. Well, I hope and I pray that I always occupy a place of honor in the minds of my grandchildren. David, the days are mostly gone, I'm afraid to tell you, when clergy were placed on a symbolic pedestal, 3 feet above contradiction. And yet, there is a place of honor reserved in many people's hearts for their pastors. As the end of August comes ever closer, I find it almost automatic to be in a reflective mood. And as I was thinking about places of honor, it occurred to me that this may be at the heart of those times when I've been a disappointment to people in this church. I suspect that there may be occasions when people have given me a place of honor, but I've somehow failed to live up to their expectations. And because I could no longer have a place of honor in their minds, they went off to be part of another congregation. The Pharisees, whom Jesus criticized, were looking for places of honor. And it's likely they demanded such places. And I think that's the point that Jesus raises. It is as if Jesus tells us to make a distinction between those whom we're naturally inclined to honor. To use Martin Luther King Jr.'s famous phrase, those who are known for the content of their character. Those that were naturally inclined to honor. Jesus is saying make a distinction between those folks and those who demand honor only because of their title or only because of their ability to threaten punishment for those who are not inclined to bow and scrape. Then Jesus speaks about the Pharisees in what they must have taken as the most unflattering terms, as I said to Christopher. I mentioned before that the life of God's people was regulated by categories of clean and unclean. Coming into contact with anyone, with anything involving the death of another person makes one unclean. Numbers 19:16 is quite clear in the law. Whoever in the open field touches one who has been killed by a sword, or who has died naturally, or a human bone, or a grave, shall be unclean 7 days. The problem that arose was that often people did not know where a grave was located. And I'm sure that this seems odd to us. And I think the reason it seems odd to us is that we have transposed something that happens as part of the Easter story, and we've assumed that's common experience. And what I mean by that is, following the death of Jesus, his body is taken by Joseph of Arimathea. You know this part of the story. Body is taken by Joseph, placed in a tomb or a cave located in a garden. And we read that part of the story and we say, oh, well, you know, that sounds very much like what we do. It sounds very much like the cemeteries that we have. Except the burial of Jesus, from everything that I've been able to read, the burial of Jesus is not commonplace. It's not the thing that usually happened. What usually happened was for families to find a spot just off to the side of a nearby roadway and simply dig the grave there. Jesus refers to this reality in Matthew chapter 23, verse 27, when he refers to the Pharisees as whitewashed tombs. And this refers to a practice that grew up around Jerusalem prior to the Passover festival each spring. And all of us who drive Toronto's roads, you know this reality. You know, Sunday mornings, there's never any problem getting from my home in Markham down to Blythewood. I mean, the Markham Road is always absolutely clear. 401 is absolutely clear. And you know what happened. Tomorrow morning will be absolutely different. And perhaps at 5 o'clock in the morning, 401 will still be having traffic moving. But as more and more traffic gets onto the roadway, it goes slower and slower. Well, what happened in Palestine around the time of Passover, which is being celebrated at this point, around the time of Passover, as the crowds flowed into the roads, as the pilgrims flowed into the roads making their way to Jerusalem, there was nothing stopping them from basically turning the sides of the roads into pathways as well. And so pilgrims had the experience, it must have happened to one or more of them one day, that as they were coming towards Jerusalem for the Passover festival, they walked on a grave. And they stepped on it before they knew it, and at that point, they were ineligible to come to the Passover. And so what happened was that people would go out and they would get whitewash and they would paint the graves. They would paint the grave markers every spring. So that when pilgrims were coming for the Passover, they would see the whitewashed graves and they would know where they shouldn't walk. Now, Luke sort of flips this idea on its side in order to suggest another way in which the Pharisees have gone astray. They were religiously active, but not with what mattered in the end. They sought to be honored, but not for the right reasons. God's people looked to them as examples of righteousness, and the Pharisees encouraged them to be looked at in that way, but it was as if they were calling people into contact with death, not life, and pointing them not toward God, but away from God. The remedy, says Jesus, is this. So give for alms those things that are within. Well, in the time we have remaining, let's think this through. This is one of those things said by Jesus that when I was preparing this sermon, the thought went through my mind, I don't remember reading this before, but of course I have. I have read this before. But it's so outside our normal way of thinking that I think we dismiss it before considering it carefully. Listen again. Give for alms those things that are within. Now, when we give, I'm not sure that we usually think about the gift coming from the inside. For instance, if I pass by someone at the bottom of the escalator at the Finch subway station, my first thought, to be honest with you, friends, my first thought is, well, how much change do I have and how much am I going to need later in the day before I give something away? Now, Jesus is telling us that really giving, really sharing, is something that comes from within. Here's what I think Jesus is reminding us of. As people of faith, we must always be asking ourselves, what is it that's going on inside? Within. The story is told that John Wesley, you know who John Wesley was, he was a priest in the Church of England who went on to found the Methodist Church. And the story is told that John Wesley had a standard question which he asked as part of his pastoral care. He would sit down with people, I don't think there were many Starbucks shops open when Wesley was doing his work, but he would sit down with people, maybe with a cup of tea, I'm not sure, but he'd say to them, what is the state of your soul? That was one of his first questions. What is the state of your soul? You'd be more than a little surprised if I sprung that one on you the next time we sat together. But it's a great question. It's a great question. What's going on inside of me? How is my faith shaping that internal place where my priorities are set and my decisions are made? Does the justice of God have a place in my soul? Is it the love of God that motivates my actions? Or is it some sort of rigid conformity to just a set of regulations that stands behind every step I take? What's going on within? What is the state of your soul? You see, friends, there's no debate here about beliefs as opposed to actions. Frankly, I'm not sure there is any belief unless there is action that goes with it. But the debate here is about deep belief in the God who wants to shape our lives through love and place in our souls a passion for His justice. If it is truly God's righteousness and God's justice that stands behind our actions, well, to use the image from earlier in the sermon, we'll be less concerned about parsley and more concerned about people. What's going on within? Is it parsley or people that motivates us? Amen.